program is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This is the theme for a show on H2. It's a cable channel, something of a sister to the History Channel. One of its other popular shows is Monster Quest, where they hunt around to see if things like Bigfoot and Birdzilla really exist.
The history that we were all taught growing up is wrong.
But this show is called America Unearthed. It's about supposedly untold stories of American history, and it explores how those stories might have been swept under the rug. I don't watch much TV, and I'm really not that interested in theories of alternate history or Bigfoot. But I got into America Unearthed because its host is involved in a bitter and niche dispute here in Minnesota. It's around an artifact that some think is real and some think is a hoax, but the fight over its past has been going on for more than a century. The more I looked into it, the more drawn in I was by how passionately people are involved in this thing and how it raises questions about who controls the history stories we learn and believe. I was intrigued by an idea that I think the Stone story raises very clearly, that, with everything we can find now on the internet, the academic world may be losing grip on its influence. And there's a question of whether we, the non-academics, even care. So, the host of that H2 show, America Unearthed, is a guy named Scott Walter.
Well, my name is Scott Walter, and I'm a forensic geologist.
I went to see him at his house last fall. It's here, in Minnesota, tucked away near a big lake outside the cities. He's a geologist, and his place is full of fossils and rocks from faraway places. It feels like a cabin, but it's really just a pretty typical suburban house.
He just wants to come up and He's such a nice boy.
Scott has two little dogs, the yippy kind. They licked my ankles and whined while we talked. He told me they're shelter dogs, and he held them like babies.
Badger, you're going to have to leave the room if you keep it up. Okay, honey? Honey, no, he wants to.
He offered me a beer when I came in. We sat down across from each other on brown leather couches. I was meeting up with him to talk about his theories about this artifact I mentioned. It's called the Kensington Runestone.
And in 2000 was when I first was introduced to the Runestone, and it has provided endless entertainment, intrigue, and scientific and personal satisfaction for, I guess this is the 15th year now.
The Runestone is this slab of rock that was supposedly dug out of a farmer's field in Minnesota in the 1890s. It's relatively flat, gray, about 2.5 feet tall, and it weighs about 200 pounds. It's carved with an inscription in runes, Old Norse letters, and it's dated 1362. So the story goes that the stone is proof that ancestors of modern Scandinavians made it to Minnesota as early as the 14th century. Or, especially for Minnesota's many Scandinavians, it's proof that the Vikings were here before Columbus. That's a big deal here.
Skoll, Vikings, let's win this game. Skoll, Vikings, honor your name. Go get that first down, then get a touchdown. Rock 'em, suck 'em, fight, 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 fight.
This is the Minnesota Vikings fight song. Fans sing it at NFL games when the team scores a touchdown. The Runestone has a long and tangled history. It has traveled across the country since it was discovered. It was featured in National Geographic in the 1940s. It's been displayed in the Smithsonian Institute, and it was at the World's Fair in the 60s. Weirdly, it was even featured on the sides of more than 2,000 U-Haul trucks. And it has its own museum here in central Minnesota, in a town called Alexandria.
This is the story of Alexandria, Minnesota, America's vacation land and the Runestone City. As we unfold the story of this historical city and land, we look back over the pages of time. It was long before Columbus discovered America, as the records show on this stone.
Alexandria and nearby Kensington are somewhat defined by the Runestone. There's a giant statue of a Viking in Alexandria that stands 28 feet tall, spear raised to the sky. Birthplace of America, it says on its shield. And Kensington has a festival every year called Runestone Days that celebrates the stone and its history. But a lot of people think the rock and its inscription are total baloney. They think someone carved it out of Scandinavian nationalism or pride to get attention or money or as a joke. Others, of course, think it's most definitely real. Both skeptics and true believers say they can point to signs on the rock itself, like the types of runes or how much the rock has weathered, and historical and archaeological evidence that prove their point. No matter how many geologists, archaeologists, runologists look at the thing, no one seems to be able to prove its history conclusively one way or the other. Scott Walter, the TV host I went to visit, he's in the believer camp.
Look, if you disagree with me, that's fine. Anyone can have an opinion about anything. But if you want to talk serious about this, put your cards on the table. I got three books. Here they are. Boom.
Scott's books include The Kensington Runestone, Compelling New Evidence, and The Hooked X, Key to the Secret History of North America. He says he's not biased, and he says the process he took to figure out if the stone is real was clear and scientific. It was the same process he would use to examine any other rock, he says.
Essentially, whenever we do any investigation in the laboratory, we start by looking at the large-scale features, and then we work small and to the microscopic level. And that's basically what I did with the runestone. I started, you know, obviously recording its dimensions, recording the things that I saw in the stone, what type of, you know, joint fractures, surface texture, all these different things. And then I talked about the inscription itself and described its physical characteristics. You know, the forensic work that we do boils down to simple logic. And the logic in this case was very simple. It's either old and it's real, or it's not old and it's modern.
Scott says you can tell that the stone is old because of how much it has been degraded by the elements over time. He also points to physical details in the runes themselves. In fact, he points to one letter in particular, the hooked X, he calls it, and says it's key to linking the stone to its historical carvers. But the thing is, Scott doesn't think those carvers were ancestors of modern Scandinavians, like many people who believe in the stone do. Instead, he thinks it was carved by a powerful band of medieval knights that have long been associated with conspiracy theories. Scott thinks they fled religious persecution in Europe and made the long journey to Central North America. And he thinks they're connected to an influential network of secret societies that still exists. So, even among the runestone believers, Scott is considered out there. He's grouped by many runestone enthusiasts among those that believe in the mystical, the absurd, so-called fringe theories like UFOs or secret societies.
You can look, people have been calling me names for a long time. And you know what I say? Look, I'm an old ball player. I've been called everything in the book. Is that the best you can do? Really?
Some who also believe the stone is real, that it was carved in the 14th century, say he's making a bad name for them, poisoning the whole field of runestone study by making people think they're all ridiculous.
I've always known about the runestone ever since we moved to Minneapolis here in 1955.
This is Bob Johnson, another researcher on the stone.
It's always been a subject that appears periodically in the news. Not always well spoken of, but nevertheless, it's well known around here.
He's a retired physicist. He worked for Honeywell for many years before taking an adjunct position with the Earth Sciences Department at the University of Minnesota. He's spent years researching the runestone with his daughter, Janie. They wrote a book together on the findings of their research and their theories about the stone. It's called The Last Kings of Norse America, Runestone Keys to a Lost Empire. They believe the runestone is connected to a 14th century Norse expedition to North America. They think the stone marks those lost in that journey. At one point, Bob wrote up parts of their research more formally, as a submission to an academic journal. He submitted it electronically, and it was rejected within 2 days.
Now, you can't have reviewed a paper like that, which had a lot of meat in it, and fairly long, in 2 days. And the editor, who he said they rejected it because they know the runestone is a fake, a fraud. You see, they know with quotation marks. Well, that's their doctrine, you see. And so they weren't going to waste any time looking at new evidence. And that is precisely the problem with many advances in these fields, you know. And in a way, you have to sympathize with them a little bit, because there are some nutty things that go on. And I get, well, I have two or three examples that I have experienced myself. People get my name. They know that I'm in the field. They send me these rather long discussions of some revolutionary idea that really doesn't make good sense, you know. And those kind of people are they're trying, but they are not they're not on track, let's say. And they do make it difficult for people who think they have a real idea, you know.
He, like Scott, believes the stone was not carved by modern Minnesotans as a fake. So you might think they'd both be on the same side, at least to some degree. But instead, Bob thinks Scott is so out there with his theories that he's making people think that anyone who believes the stone is real is crazy. This, Bob says, then hurts his own attempts to have his more rational voice heard.
If the authorities can look at some of the activities of the History Channel, say, and say, well, we know that's wrong, and I can look at it also and say, we know that's wrong, then it's like me getting tarred with the same brush as far as the authorities are concerned. That shouldn't be a permanent problem, but it doesn't help, you see, in your missionary work to get people convinced that you've got a historical story that's factual, you know.
There's one thing that Scott and Bob do agree on, though. It's that academia is failing the runestone. There are well-respected academic researchers who have and continue to study the stone. And, as I mentioned, no one has been able to say conclusively if it's real or not. But Scott thinks, just like Bob, that academics overall stick up their nose at the thought of it, dismissing anyone who so much as raises the question of if it's real.
And in fairness to them, you know, you have people outside of academia that come up with all these different theories for things that, you know, that, like you said, they're passionate about. And some of their ideas are interesting and have some merit, and some of them are just crazy and everything in between. So what is academia to do with some of these people? Well, in some cases, they dismiss them, and rightly so. But what I don't see is, I don't agree with you, and here's why. Boom, 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 boom. Now, I don't have a problem with people disagreeing with me. I don't mind with people saying to me, you're full of shit. But tell me why I'm full of shit, okay?
So you feel like the debate has sort of broken down.
Well, there is no debate. It's, look, I'm saying you're wrong, and that's it, because I got the PhD. I've heard people say to me that they were told by their professors, if you go anywhere near this, you'll never get a job in this industry. Or, you know, you risk your career if you dare take this on. And, you know, and just if you look at the history of the stone, there are many people who are, like you said, trying to get these positions that are hard to get. And, you know, it's riddled with all kinds of landmines on a personal level. Why go there? I work in the professional world, and it's a hell of a lot different than the academic world. And quite frankly, I think when it comes down to answering these types of questions, it's far better than academia. I can't just flippantly throw something out and say, well, I'm the authority here because I'm a PhD. I can't do that. I just want to tell you one story that was so appropriate. And if I could summarize the runestone.
That's crazy.
Darwin, you have no idea how appropriate your timing is. I'm being interviewed by somebody doing a documentary on the runestone. We were just talking about you, what, less than a minute ago. This is Darwin, isn't it?
Darwin is the grandson of the guy that found the runestone, Olaf Oman.
Hello? Oh, shoot.
Oh, no.
Oh, this phone sometimes doesn't work very good. Oh,
How are...
That's too bad. It was perfect timing.
I mean, my God. Oh, that is so funny. He'll call back, I'm sure.
The Ullman family was criticized, some argue ferociously so, by those that did not believe the runestone is real. And Scott points out how much he thinks Darwin and his family have suffered from this.
Hey, Darwin and I are really close, mm-hmm. very close. And, you know, I'd be lying too if I said at this point, part of my motivation mm-hmm. is because I care about the family. And there's still some awful, dirty, nasty people out there that... as long as I'm around, I'm not going to let them impact this family.
Yeah, you keep referring to they. And I just wonder, like, do you think of the people who believe that the runestone isn't real as a mass?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I put them all in the same category. But the ones who are the worst are the academics. But then you have these others out there, these, you know, internet, you know, tough guys behind a computer, these anonymous people that, you know, that's another faction I run into all the time.
You're talking like Jason Colavito. I've
seen. Oh, he's one of them. Yeah, he's nasty. But you know, the thing about Colavito is he's a debunker. His arguments are not sincere. He will not acknowledge a factual point if it doesn't support his argument. So, but this is a guy who's very savvy. He's figured out how to manipulate the internet to control the discussions to a large degree.
My name is Jason Colavito, and I am an author and editor from Albany, New York.
Jason keeps a blog where he dissects pseudoscientific claims and alternate history narratives presented on popular TV shows like Ancient Aliens and America Unearthed. He says he stumbled across Scott somewhat by accident.
I really did not have any knowledge of Scott Walter beyond the concept that he was some guy I saw on TV occasionally until 2012, when I happened to read an article that he wrote about the Newport Tower. This is a windmill in Rhode Island from the colonial period that some people believe is much older and is actually a European construction from the Middle Ages.
Jason says Scott had written an article about that tower for a magazine called Ancient Americans, and that magazine sent the article to Jason as part of an anthology for review on his blog.
That was the first time I had ever paid any attention to Scott Walter, and I noted at the time that his article didn't make a lot of sense, that his theories were had gone quite beyond the evidence, and that even taking everything he said at face value, it didn't really prove the case he was trying to make.
Later, the H2 channel started showing America Unearthed after another program Jason had been reviewing for his website for some time, Ancient Aliens.
Because I was interested in archaeology, I decided to watch America Unearthed and write a review of it, the same as I did for Ancient Aliens. And I was taken aback by the conspiracy theories, by the unconventional use of evidence, and by the extreme claims that Scott Walter was making on America Unearthed. So I followed the series over its first two seasons, writing reviews of the show for my website, which became extremely popular, and unfortunately have also earned some opprobrium from Scott Walter and his supporters.
Right. And what's wrong, in your view, with the show, with his work?
One of the major issues with Scott Walter's work is that the conclusions he draws go far beyond the evidence that he collects. He sees a vast world historical conspiracy stretching from the days of ancient Egypt, at least, down to the present. He sees a shadowy group of figures associated with the Knights Templar and the Freemasons who are secretly controlling history from behind the scenes. And he believes that nearly every anomalous artifact found in the United States from any time in any place is somehow evidence that somehow, somewhere, this group of Freemason, Templar, secret society is controlling everything from afar.
Jason has also written broadly about these kinds of fringe theories and why they can be so captivating to everyday people. He says those who develop these theories, like Scott, tend to follow a very predictable pattern.
Many of them start out trying to actually make a historical case or historical argument using evidence and logic and reasoning, but when they don't receive the approval of academia, of mainstream historians, they tend to fall back on the idea that it's not that they are wrong or that their argument wasn't strong enough, but rather that academics are trying to suppress the truth.
And because they think that someone is trying to suppress the truth, he says, they think, oh, that must mean there's something correct in what I'm saying, that there's something someone is trying to hide. And over time, he says, that leads them to make more and more outlandish claims based on less and less scientific evidence. Here's Scott.
Long ago, I gave up trying to work with academics because I can't work with them because they because of all these problems. I said, look, let's talk about the evidence. They don't want to do that. And they, you know, I've had some of them try to baffle me with bullshit, you know, and I said, look, no. What can I say? I mean, they're going to call me a conspiracy person, but it's not a conspiracy if the facts are there, is it?
Jason says he's thrown so much time into quote-unquote debunking these theories because he's worried about the message shows like America Unearthed and Ancient Aliens send to the public. The consequences, he says, of twisting history.
Those consequences might not be immediately apparent. It's not as though saying, well, the Knights Templar were here in the 1300s, therefore the United States government doesn't exist and we are all now suddenly going to be subjects to the King of the Templars. But there are more subtle consequences.
Jason says shows that present themselves as fact create a situation where the public can't tell what's true and what's not. And people tend to assume the things they see on TV are true, that they've gone through an editorial process, especially when they're presented that way. And when history becomes what one guy says it is or what another guy says it is, it undermines our whole academic system, the system we rely on to tell us what's true and what's not. And that, Jason says, opens the door to people using their own stories of history as propaganda to manipulate people in more serious ways. In Scott's case, for example, he's not just a lone researcher tinkering away in his basement lab. He's incredibly warm and relatable. He's a gripping storyteller, a magnetic personality, and he's on national TV. That means he has a large audience, larger, some might argue, than history books at this point. So to Jason and many who have studied the Runestone, Scott is waging something of a war against science and the truth. When I asked him about this, Scott at first said he didn't understand.
What can I say? I mean, and at the end of the day, I guess, why are you getting all upset about this? What's the big deal?
Well, I think
I don't understand why it's a big deal.
People get upset when things happen outside of our structures that we've set to be the structures that preserve knowledge.
They upset.
That if you're promoting a theory outside of that that they disagree with, and you're swaying public opinion, which you have the power to do with your show.
And I take that very seriously.
Right, that they feel that that's threatening, you know. You know, that's why I say this power of public opinion mm-hmm. holds great sway.
Well, and I have to say, you bring up a really good point. But getting back to this whole thing about public opinion, what I've learned is that, you know, and this goes back to football metaphors I use all the time because I'm an old ball player. There's more than one way to win a ball game, okay? The pass isn't working, try the run, you know, and vice versa, or mix it up, or blitz once in a while, or, you know. There's always different strategies that you can apply. And I gave up working with academics a long time ago because I know that's a dead end. And so it's a marketing campaign now. So what I'm doing is I'm presenting the evidence in a way that anyone can understand. And what I'm hoping is that enough people are going to say, you know what, Sherlock, I get this. What's wrong with you? And I think going the public route is the way to do it. That's the strategy that you figured it out.
It remains to be seen if the controversy over the Runestone's history will ever be settled. And, I have to say, it's unlikely to have far-reaching consequences either way for the course of United States history. It's no JFK assassination. No one is saying that the U.S. government actually orchestrated the 9/11 attacks or faked our landing on the moon. But for Scott and for those involved, it still feels big.
It's very rare when you have an opportunity to be part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I've had that opportunity, and I have that opportunity, not just with the research on the runestone, but with this show, to bring these things to, that very few people know about, to the world, really. And I take that very seriously.
You've been listening to Runestone Histories on KFAI. I'm Brita Green.